Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Let's get started. We have a lot of interesting things to talk about, and we'll certainly get into that in a moment. We welcome you to join us, roundtable at WAMC.org, if you would like to email us. And what happens is you email us with great fury and excitement, and then it magically winds up in Alan's machine, and then he reads it to us. See, that's how that works.
I'll do whatever you tell me, Joe.
Alan Shartok is here on the panel. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joseph. I'm just fine.
Good, good. We also have Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain back with us this morning. Was here yesterday, is here with us today, and we couldn't be more thrilled. Thank
Great
you very
morning.
Much. And Daily Gazette Editor Judy Patrick is here, who is, I was going to say that, you know,
you just can't help yourself.
No,
can you?
I can't. So,
what were you going to say?
No, I was just thinking that it's it must be nice to get out of the smoke-filled room.
You know, so we had a fire on Sunday morning at the Daily Gazette. It was a contained, three separate fires contained quickly by the Schenectady Fire Department. We're
that
very
could be
thankful.
Suspicious.
Well, three different fires would be damn well suspicious.
We're very thankful.
One heck of a coincidence.
Oh, that more damage wasn't done, and we're really thankful for the outpouring of support from the community. So,
is the Schenectady Police Department on the case?
Fire and police, as well as the ATF, they're all investigating this, and we have every confidence they are going to come to a conclusion.
Got a list of suspicious characters?
I do not know. I'm not in that loop, but I've seen them solve these kind of cases before, although some arsons do go unsolved.
So now all the folks from like Quick Response are coming in and
they
making
are.
Sure. And
wonderful. It's like a spring cleaning.
Oh, that's great.
The air is. We are back to business as usual. In fact, we were it was a little bit of a challenge on Sunday night, but we printed at our home base. The Times Union offered to print us if we couldn't get our own press started.
Nice.
Very nice.
And my Daily Gazette was at my doorstep before 6 a.m. On Monday morning.
So didn't even skip a beat.
So didn't skip a beat.
That's great. Well, we were thinking of you. We're glad you're here. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hopefully all of that will come to a
we should
a good
come more
conclusion.
Often.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Everyone is introduced. Let's get to the topic. So last night, of course, there were primaries, even though this has all been but wrapped up on the Republican side. Donald Trump won in both West Virginia and Nebraska, but also Hillary Clinton had a bad night in losing West Virginia.
Right. Now, remember that West Virginia is a coal state and that Hillary was being punished to some degree for having made remarks about how we have to wean ourselves off coal. And, you know, I get it. If you happen to have a job that way or if you have a stake in the game, you might be forced to vote against Hillary. On the other hand, look, Bernie Sanders has shown a revolutionary zeal to many people in America, saying, look, this what's going on isn't right, and I want to lead you in the right direction that I see. And people are responding to it. No two ways about it.
But does a win like this, does it prolong the inevitable, or does he legitimately have a chance? And if the question is yes to the first part of that, which is it's prolonging the inevitable, then is he then also doing damage to the party and to the unity, especially when there is such concern over the Republican who is presumed to be the nominee?
Well, the last thing I want to do is monopolize this conversation. You all realize that, right? And why has Judy got a smile from one ear to the other?
Actually, I think they're both smiling, interestingly enough.
But I got to say...
But...
Yeah, no, but, you know, he made mention in his talk yesterday that while there were differences between the secretary and himself, the main thing was that they had to get out there and beat Donald Trump. And I think a lot of people took solace from that because they said, okay, well, that indicates that he is going to setting the highest priority on beating Trump. If he loses, he'll be with her.
Is he bringing her to the left?
Is he bringing? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. She certainly has come. She's speaking to the same issues: income inequality. She had a robust plan for West Virginia to retrain and provide economic aid for out of work miners. I think, by the way, her comments back in March on CNN that got her in so much trouble with the mining industry or with the workers was really taken out of context. Although she didn't state it very well, when you look at the whole tape, it was completely in the context of doing something to help rescue the economy, and people haven't done anything in the past. Now, both she and Bernie Sanders had major economic plans to help West Virginia and all the mining states. Donald Trump went to West Virginia and had a crowd and said, you know, we're going to put miners back in the mines. I don't know what they're going to do back in the mines, because they're doing strip mining now and they don't need a lot of miners, and they don't even need a lot of coal, because gas, natural gas, all that fracked gas from Pennsylvania and elsewhere has been driving the price down, and it's not economical to use coal.
Ohio is finding, of course, that they're having all these earthquakes and all these things.
Oh, sure.
And there does seem to be a correlation between the fracking and what's happening over there.
Yeah, there was a study that several months ago that did draw a correlation. But what I'm saying is that the mining industry, she was just saying the mining industry is going away. And, you know, climate change deniers and people think others, you know, go for the rhetoric that we're going to put people back into mines and we're going to, you know, invigorate those mines. It's just not going to happen. And I think she took a lot of hits.
Yeah.
You know, and the issue of pushing Hillary to the left more, wasn't it just yesterday she came out in favor of expanding Medicare?
Wider access to Medicare, yeah.
That was widely seen, you're right, Judy, as a concession to the left.
And it's unusual that, didn't Hillary do really well in West Virginia 8 years ago? It's just the CNN comments that torpedoed her in this state this time around?
I think that's right. Yeah. She seems to have really been beaten up by, well, it was not elegant what she said. You know, we're getting rid of the mining jobs, we're closing the mines. I think it was a rhetorical statement about we society, not we, I'm going to. And then she continued to talk very articulately about the need to diversify the economies there and to provide economic aid. But, you know, that's just one thing. There was some exit polls last night that I saw on some of the news channels that suggested it's an open primary, and some people who would rather vote for Trump over Hillary were supporting Bernie with the expectation that they probably would vote for Trump in November. I don't know what the percentages of that segment were, but that's a little bit frightening. It just tells you how up in the air this whole thing is.
And from my reading last night, the campaign spin, the Clinton campaign spin, was we spent a lot of time more so on California and the general election and didn't spend a lot of time in West Virginia.
Is that a foolish decision, a pragmatic decision? Who knows? Bernie Sanders was speaking in Oregon last night. Salem, Oregon had 4,000 people. And he's bringing out the crowds. He's continuing inspire people to really support him. She doesn't get crowds like that, but, you know, she does have the numbers. It's really, really nearly impossible for her not to have clinched the nomination by the California primary on June 7th.
Well, those who are supporting Bernie make it clear that they are with him all the way. And we are getting one letter after another, which some of which are really quite frightening because people really see this guy as a revolutionary. Look, I voted for him, but I have to tell you, some of the mail is just frightening.
This is people who support Bernie so much that they will not support Hillary in the general.
Not only that, but make all kinds of insinuations and, conspiracies, and it gets a little crazy after a while.
The other poll that came out yesterday was the vulnerability. Quinnipiac put out a poll. We've all, I think, all seen the polls between the potential matchup between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in the fall, the general elections. We talk a lot about polls on this hour. Rosemary hates them, but sometimes we look at them and say, well, it's a snapshot and it gives us an idea. The poll that came out yesterday, both in Ohio and Pennsylvania, shows the race very, very close.
One point either way sometimes.
And what the polls also show is in a potential matchup between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders that Bernie Sanders is way ahead. So does that give him any momentum of going into these larger contests, such as California?
Well, California can be a tricky state, as we all know. And that's why they call it the Left Coast. And there is no question in my mind that he could surge ahead there, because this is a state which votes for Ronald Reagan, but also votes for Jerry Brown in the early days when he was over there.
And again.
Yeah, and then again when he was more moderate, as we have seen.
Did
in his post Linda Ronstadt days.
Has Jerry Brown, I assume Jerry Brown has endorsed Hillary Clinton, but I don't know that for a fact.
You know, I don't either. That's good.
But what is interesting, Joe, is that almost the entire Democratic establishment, here, there, and everywhere, that's why she's so far ahead with the superdelegates, all put their money on her thinking she could not lose.
And that's been pretty firm. I think one senator from Oregon, a Democratic senator from Oregon, has endorsed Bernie Sanders, and that's pretty much it. In New York, you saw the same thing. But even if she were not to win, it would be a big psychological blow to her campaign. But it's not a winner-take-all primary in California.
You know, and Bernie supporters, there are some Bernie supporters who say this is actually will be good if Hillary is the nominee, because they're vetting all these issues now rather than fighting with the Republicans or fighting, and so getting this all out in the public, what we'll have is a stronger Democratic presidential nominee going forward.
I just looked it up. Jerry Brown has not endorsed either candidate. Both Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are obviously courting that endorsement, especially since the governor, as of April 16th, had a nearly 61% approval rating in the state of California.
Well, people like him.
That's a good point. Yeah. And I agree with Judy. I think that there is a strong belief and likelihood that by airing all these issues now, Hillary will come out of this. Had she just walked in and been coronated and handed the nomination without any firm opposition like Bernie has given her, it would have been pretty bad for her. She would have been very vulnerable when the real election, the general election started. General election, pardon me.
The big show, if you will.
Right, the big reality show.
We've got about 3 or 4 minutes before we go over to the Beeb, right, to news. So let us go to some letters.
Okay, letters. Al's been writing us almost every day. A lot of utopia. Sanders, a lot of utopia, little substance, no different from Trump in approach to wooing the electorate. Well, there are many of us who would take some exception to that, but fine. That's your view, and you said it. Daisy says, are you going to discuss the shortfall in Sanders' health care plan, $17 trillion over 10 years? Well, you did. Thank you. And unless anybody wants to jump in on that, Daisy says, Bernie has had no scrutiny. There are a myriad of details and statements from his past that are cringeworthy. That word.
I think she's right on that as far as he certainly hasn't had the scrutiny in a general election that Hillary has seen in the primary.
Look, I have said from the very beginning that what this is all about is that the Republicans were assuming, without question, that Hillary was going to be the candidate for years. And so they have beaten the hell out of her again and again and again and again. Sanders has had a free ride. People have not started up with him because now you get Trump, who would love to see Sanders as the candidate, which he's not going to be. But he's sowing as much dissension as he possibly can. I don't know if I said this yesterday, Joe, but I have this idea of Trump will say anything to anybody if he thinks it'll get him ahead. And my bet is the next thing you're going to see from Trump is he's going to name 4 Supreme Court judges, all of whom would be to the Democrats' liking, see? And he will say, these are people I would appoint to the Supreme Court. And then Democrats vote for him because it's the one thing that we all keep harping on.
And do you think he'd actually appoint any of them?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that would take trust.
Or as Al D'Amato said once, clairvoyantly, that was then and this is now.
Right. Things change. A couple more letters.
Okay, we'll a couple more letters. Yep. Okay. Tracy, I guess.
Yes.
Bernie needs to get out. He's not a unifier. He would be a do-nothing president based on his thin resume. That's what she said. Okay, and then Brian says something which has nothing to do with what we're doing here. And Robert says, coal mine has been suckered by pandering Republican pals who swear that they will save the coal industry when they know full well that foreign competition and the lowering cost of natural gas have doomed U.S. coal production, no matter which party controls the levers of power. And Daisy says, we already read what Daisy says, and John says, Trump and Bernie. Seems to me that Trump is actively campaigning for Bernie voters. Thoughts? Yeah, I think that's right.
I think he's even said that.
Yeah. Let's see here. And then Nicholas says, Bernie supporters who would vote for Trump obviously don't care about Bernie's policies. Says you. Michael says, on the press, Trump leads Hillary by 4 points in Ohio and trailing her by 1 point in Florida. By the way, he's been married to three immigrants. Kind of hypocritical, considering his stance on immigration, goes to show immigrants take American take jobs Americans don't don't want.
Okay, well, politically incorrect, but
that,
very funny
that
statement.
Is one
I
of
think
the funniest things I've ever seen. Do good. I have time for one more? Or not.
Yeah, go ahead.
Marcia says against Obama in the past, West Virginia did not vote for a black candidate, thus Hillary's win. Marcia from Kinderhook. Does anybody get that one? I don't get that one. Against Obama in the past.
He was, or she was against Obama in the past.
Did not vote
for a black candidate, thus Hillary's win eight years ago. This was to Judy's
right, point. Right. He won the largest black vote. Obama did. Yeah.
Bernie's next move. Should Bernie's next move be announcing his VP choices? What are your thoughts about Robert Reich as his nominee, recognizing his current book, Saving Capitalism, and his being former Secretary of Labor? I believe it would promote a progressive ticket.
It sure would.
You know that strategy sure worked for Ted Cruz, didn't it?
Yes.
Well, right, and I like him because he's a little guy,
he's a very, Robert Reich.
Right.
Short stature.
We're out of time for this segment. We'll be right back on the other side of the news. We welcome your letters. Roundtable@wamc.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion that we're having this morning. In case you missed it earlier today, a momentous thing happened here at the radio station. Our lockbox opened up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, thank God for the lockbox.
It's sort of always open, but it's officially open now.
Now it's open.
Before, it's what they call in the business a soft opening. But now it's like really open.
Right.
Open for business. That's right. So the lockbox helps us take days off the fun drive.
It could be the end of the fun drive right
That's
now.
That's right. So what we want to tell you is that for a $100 pledge, right now we have this really cool
Watch this now.
Vote package.
Watch.
Now, where are we? Do we have cameras in here anymore?
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Yeah. Over my shoulder.
Watch is metaphorical.
So there is a, you get the vote mug, and it says vote for WAMC.
It's a beauty.
Which, of course, means, on two fronts. Vote. For your community and for WAMC, so vote for whoever, but then also vote for us as the station and help us out by doing that. And if this isn't enough and you think just drinking your coffee and showing your friends that you're a WAMC supporter, we feel that's not enough, which is why we're also throwing in
the official
T-shirt.
Who authorized this?
Oh, how
look
nice.
At that.
That's a beauty.
See,
that's
this is what happens when you go to North or. New Orleans.
Is there anything in the back?
And we have meetings and stuff.
My God, look at the back.
Okay, and it says vote for WAMC.
Huge.
So
it's not subtle.
No, it's not. It is not
black
subtle,
and
Mike.
Black and white, very nice.
And
I gotta
it's
get
black
me one
and
of
white, right.
Cotton or
prison issue. It's very nice.
Cotton.
And then
it really is gorgeous.
And you get the
mug.
The mug and the T-shirt. So
and that's $100.
$100
donation.
And,
but anything is welcome. Anything is welcome.
That's right. So if you have $5, $20, $50, whatever you can do to put in the lockbox, because every dollar counts. And we haven't really talked about this officially, Alan, but we will.
Yeah.
But let me just throw this fact out that we had more than $400,000 in the lockbox this time last year.
It was unbelievable.
Going into the June drive, we had over $400,000.
Yeah.
So obviously we want to do as well as that, right?
Right.
If not more, and
right.
be done the whole
But
damn
do you
thing.
Have enough cups and shirts? I'm a little worried.
Yes,
now.
We actually. Well, maybe not. The first people who get in there really do get them. I see where you're going with this.
Yes, it's
while supplies last.
Yes, while supplies last, and
operators are standing by.
And then we do find that if you put them in the supply cabinet late at night, they do multiply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. They have children.
They will have little babies. And
tiny shirts.
That's right. Unless somebody starts a fire in our building. Hopefully that won't happen to any of us ever again. Okay, so WAMC.org. Go on the website. Everything's there. It's on the pull-down menu for the vote package. But also, whatever you there's other stuff on there. You can check it out. It's WAMC.org. And we'll start to give you totals and things. It just started this morning. And we'll be watching that over the next month. So the fund drive is only 3.5 weeks away. It starts June 6th.
The day before the California primary.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
We already got beaten up for that. There's a letter here from Rick who says, Alan, California is called the left coast because it's on the left side of the map, not because of politics.
I disagree. I would disagree with that. Yeah,
I think it's double both, meaning, right? Yeah. Yes.
A double entendre.
Okay. Let's get back to business. So the president of the United States is, we talked about this a few weeks or a month ago, but the president has decided that he will visit Hiroshima. And there was some question as to whether that would be the case. And President Obama will be the first sitting president to visit Hiroshima. And that was announced yesterday. The trip is expected, I believe, to take place in June. Am I right on that? The visit, which has been under consideration for most of Mr. Obama's presidency, could serve as a coda to the transformation in the relationship between Japan and the United States, from wartime enemies to the closest of allies, but it also has the potential to open old wounds, and it will take place in the shadow of a growing nuclear threat from North Korea. May 27th.
Right.
Is the visit.
Well, I think it's gutsy of them to do it. I think it's the right thing. There are people who would say it's not particularly political and it won't help the Democrats and all that stuff. One of the things I like about Obama is he's a man of conscience. And I think this is appropriate. He's not going to apologize for what we did, apparently, but he's going to go.
So both American and Japanese officials sought to avoid any appearance that the visit would amount to an apology for the bombing, which killed more than 100,000 people. Benjamin Rhodes, who is Mr. Obama's deputy national security advisor for strategic communication, how's that for a title on your business card, said he will not revisit the decision to use the atomic bomb at the end of World War II. Instead, he will offer a forward-looking vision focused on our shared future.
You know, it's particularly interesting now that Trump has suggested that we open up the possibility of encouraging other countries to develop their nuclear capabilities.
Including Japan, right?
Including Japan and South Korea. So that brings that issue to the fore. But you can't forget, we've all probably talked to World War II veterans who are very, you know, the still remember that and have very strong opinions about what happened at the end of that war. It is time to move on, but I think it's very important that Obama not apologize, especially
Absolutely.
For that generation of people.
Right, right. The hundreds and hundreds of thousands of
troops
that would have
been
not,
dead.
Yeah, that would have died, and Japanese troops and civilians too. So. You know, we don't want to debate that over again. But
no.
I'm just, this is interesting. It's sort of, we're in that final year of Obama, and he's going to make other appearances around the globe, I'll bet, you know, and say some, you know, nonpartisan things that are bold. And it's going to be a very interesting year from that perspective. We have a distraction of an election going on. But
well, I heard it described as his bucket list.
Yeah,
that's
right.
His presidential bucket list of things that he feels that a president should do. And if it felt right to him, he was going to do them.
So yep. Cuba was on the list, obviously.
Yep. Hiroshima was on the list. So,
did anyone hear of any plan to go to Kenya, back to the land of his father?
You know, well, he went in the beginning, didn't he?
He went to near there. I don't know if he actually did he? Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, enough said.
if you ask Trump, he'll probably say he needed a pick up his birth certificate.
That didn't want to go there, but
not good. Okay, and then we have the story about, let me just get to this real quick, and then we'll take a break and get some more. So, have you all seen the West Point cadet photo?
Yes, okay. I saw it.
Now, if for those of you who haven't, this has become a deal, although there's now been an investigation which has cleared everybody, but a group of black female cadets from West Point who posed for a photograph with their fists raised in the air did not break any Army or Department of Defense rules, according to an inquiry into the matter. The inquiry found that the picture was among several taken in a spur of the moment at the U.S. Military Academy. And the photograph showed 16 cadets posing at the U.S. Military Academy, all pictured in cadet dress, uniforms, and raising their fists. The cadets wouldn't face any punishment. The concern was,
They will face instruction.
Yes. Yes.
Whatever that means.
Face instruction.
It had been shared widely. The photo had been shared widely in military circles with claims that the women were supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. As the suggestion rose, others say the picture just displayed something else entirely, which was a sign of unity as being a West Point graduate, and they were not trying to imply any allegiance to any movement.
So for argument's sake, what if they were supporting Black Lives Matter? I think some people have suggested that a close reading of the code on this or the rules are that officers are not supposed to engage in subversive political activities or partisan political activities. And is the Black Lives Movement a subversive movement?
And also, this is...
It would have to be answered by the military disciplinarians, I guess. Yeah. Yeah.
And it is also 16 African-American female cadets, which...
Well, that's a remarkable thing.
It really is
West Point
a remarkable
class
thing.
Has 16 African-American women in it. Who would have thought that?
And I could just see what the generals were thinking when they were sitting around the table. Let's see. Now, if we punish them, there will be all hell to pay. And if we don't and let them go, they'll be de minimis. And I think that decision was correct, and I think that's what happened.
Being quite the pacifist myself, I do have to say, though, that looking at this photo of these young women, you think to yourself, well, this looks great. Like, if this is the Army protecting us, well, amen. I think that's good.
You know what it reminded me of was the 1968 Summer Olympics in Mexico City, where Tommy Smith and John Carlos won gold and silver medals and raised their fists, which was a symbol of black power. And they lost their medals. The U.S. Olympic Committee ostracized them. It changed their lives. They suffered for it for decades, you know, because they took a political position. And that was partly the Olympics sort of reacting to the way that it didn't happen in 1936. People didn't object to the Berlin Olympics when people were, you know, raising their fist for Hitler. But you know, symbolism can mean a lot of different things to different people. And maybe all it really means is what you said, Joe, you know, that it's just solidarity and hubris for these graduates.
And the young women who were a part of this and several of the people taking the photographs said that they took about 20, you know, we are in this selfie generation. They took about 20 of these pictures in all kinds of poses, you know, where they were in different standing on the steps. Some were, you know, lateral. Some were they were on top. and it was just all kinds of configurations. And it just sort of was one of about 20 photos where they were celebrating the fact that they had just graduated. So anyway,
quite an accomplishment.
That is that story. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about more stuff and get your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Preferred Mutual Insurance Company, offering home, auto, and business insurance products in New Jersey, New York, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire through an independent agent network, preferredmutual.com. Flatbrook & Company, a design and build firm servicing the Berkshires and Capital Region, working to transform homes and businesses using creative and innovative methods with a commitment to the environment, flatbrookandco.com. And Allardyce Glass & Mirror, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing sales, service, and installation of glass, shower enclosures, mirror, and screen products for the home, allardyce.com.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. The governor of New York State was in the Adirondacks yesterday. He was announcing the completion of the state's largest Adirondack land acquisition in more than 100 years with a purchase of a 20,758-acre tract of land. Meanwhile, the reporters there were less interested in that and more interested in the investigation into and around the Cuomo administration.
Shocked, I tell you. Shocked.
I know. I know. It is hard to believe. So the story to come out of it in the Times Union was a little bit about the tract of land, but oddly it had more to do with what the governor said. And Casey Seiler wrote the article. I don't know what you said
about
Mike.
Casey's story. We had a few stories today about this current investigation by the U.S. attorney from the Southern District of New York, where he has subpoenaed six members of Cuomo's inner circle or who had connections to Cuomo's inner circle. And the governor was asked about that, and he made very clear that he had not been subpoenaed. And they have hired their own former federal investigator to help them understand it and make any necessary corrections. Paul Grondahl, our great reporter, did an in-depth piece for the Sunday Times Union that looked at one of the key people in this investigation, and that's a fellow named Todd Howe, who's a lobbyist. He's from the Capital Region, and he has connections back to Mario Cuomo, where
right,
he was
important.
A young man who was served as Mario Cuomo's advance man and has had connections in and out of that administration. When Andrew Cuomo went down to Washington to work for HUD back in the 90s under the Bill Clinton, Todd Howe went along, and so did Joseph Percoco, another close associate of Mario Cuomo and the Cuomo family.
And enforcer.
A political enforcer is one of the terms people use to describe him. But on the inside, well, they're not in the administration now, but their connections to some upstate development projects based out of Syracuse and based out of Buffalo are being closely scrutinized by the U.S. attorney, and the governor has cut off all connections to them and kind of has disassociated himself with them, has said nice things about Joe Percoco, but also made it very clear that he was unaware of anything that might have been going on that was improper. And
I knew nothing.
Well, you know, this was during a period when Percoco took a leave of absence from Cuomo's administration to work on Cuomo's campaign. And during that time, he received some consulting fees, and so did his wife. And those are
But Cuomo,
being
by
questioned.
The way, Mike,
yes.
knew that he was doing the consulting. What Cuomo says, and some people think is disingenuous, was that he didn't know who he was taking the money from, the consulting money from.
Well,
so that's
what he says. And, you know, this is all ongoing. Today, Chris Bragg, our reporter, has more story, more about Todd Howe, a gentleman who is a lobbyist who's lost his job with a local law firm now as their lobbyist.
Not a local law firm,
the local law firm.
Whitman, Osterman, and Hanna.
Whiteman, Osterman, and Hanna. And he, the Cuomo administration has said nobody's supposed to talk to him, but it was very clear that for a long time, if you hired Todd Howe as your lobbyist, you got access to people in the Department of Transportation and various other departments, Canal Corporation, et cetera, Energy, you know, the Power Authority. And those people, he opened the door for his clients. And that's what the story today is about, one of the clients in Syracuse who was kind of disgruntled.
Okay, so there are people who truly believe, that Andrew Cuomo is in the sights of Preet Bharara. And let's assume that we know that both Howe and Percoco got subpoenas, right?
They were two of six people who got the subpoenas.
Okay. There are those of us who believe that Percoco will not roll on the governor. They were very close. And even though his wife has been implicated to some degree of getting some of the consulting money, which might make somebody think twice about what to say when the lights go on in the interview room. But Todd Howe, I think they're really worried about. That's what I think.
Right. As evidenced from Paul's story, Paul Grondahl's story Sunday and today's story, Todd Howe had some financial problems. He had some unpaid bills, and he had a problem with some deposits and some checks.
Well, he pled guilty. He got a year. He got a probation for a year.
Involving a few years ago.
And the governor says he didn't know about that.
Yeah. Right. That probably makes them nervous because he's under a lot of pressure. So this whole thing will play out, and all the papers are covering it. The New York Times is big on it. Of course, the Daily News, I think, kind of broke the subpoena story. There's a lot of pressure on the governor. So when he goes to the Adirondacks, Joe, and wants to talk about the acreage that's the state is buying to preserve and...
Well, it does one of his canoe races.
Right. That's not the topic of the day, is it?
So here's my journalistic question that I have. So early in January, the governor was on a goodwill tour, basically going out and giving a lot of money to a lot of different people across the state. This was earlier this year, right? So one of the announcements was in regards to Penn Station and Madison Square Garden.
Right.
Correct?
Right, that's
big,
correct.
And big, billions of dollars, mode, and there would be a transportation hub, and there would be this Empire Station complex, which would be around the new Madison Square Garden.
Now, Madison Square Garden is very important, right, is what you're leading up to, right,
so
Joe?
My question is that Joe Prococo left about 2 weeks later to be a part of Madison Square Garden.
He had a soft landing.
And I'm just curious as to, has that connection been fully explored?
I personally don't know the terms or the circumstances of Prococo's position with the Madison Square
Because the governor,
Garden
again, said he had no idea where Prococo was going or what he was going to do. And it just seemed odd to me
In all fairness, if you were an organization that wanted to be close to Andrew Cuomo, picking somebody who was close to Mario Cuomo and Andrew Cuomo, who Andrew Cuomo described Joe Prococo as his third brother, as his brother, and Mario Cuomo's third son, rather. That's how close they are. If you wanted to get close to the governor, you wouldn't have to go to the governor and broker it. You could just hire somebody who's very close to him, and that would give you access. And that's the way it works. You hire people who have the key to the kingdom, so to speak, who can get you heard before state agencies.
But aren't there rules about this?
Revolving door.
Oh, rule schmools.
And as an average citizen, you listen to the governor say, well, I didn't know what these guys were doing. But anybody who runs a company or is in management knows part of your responsibility is to make sure the people who work for you are abiding by the rules.
Standards. Editors do this for
reporters all the time. You do it here, I'm sure, at WNC.
Well, anybody who knows Andrew Cuomo knows he knows everything, like the shadow.
He didn't know about
this. I know that. That's the whole point. It defies. I mean, this is a guy who works the phones day and night, who talks to everybody. These were his two closest, among his two closest associates.
Yeah, I don't know how close Hal was in recent years, but Prococo certainly was. Hal was in there, but he's been a little more distant since he's been a professional lobbyist.
Maybe he needs to be a little bit more engaged.
Who, the governor?
Yes.
I don't think that's right. Both of you are bending so far backwards that I think your heads are hitting the floor behind you.
Are they bending backwards?
What we're acknowledging here, Alan, is what is not known. And what you're saying may well be true, and it certainly suggests that.
But you have to prove it, right?
But there is an investigation going on by a guy who's pretty good at getting information, Greg Barrara.
I think that's right.
And we'll find out. As he likes to say, stay tuned.
Right, you are. Yes, Chief.
Yes, he does like to say that. All right, we have 2 minutes, sir. Do you want to read some letters?
All right, I'll lead to Alex says, so sad how all the Albany corruption stuff has y'all talking about the 15 minutes instead of a historic land conservation deal for the people of New York State to experience nature. Let's see here. Carol, our wonderful Carol, says, I wholly support the wonderful women at West Point. I wonder how much of the hoo-ha occurred because the young ladies were in uniform in the picture. Cadets must be very careful about what they do when wearing their USMA uniforms. I took the fish raising as a celebration of the recent accomplishment and the thrill of their success. Love the show. Love you guys. And we love Carol. Okay. And Joseph says, I wholly support the wonderful... Oh, no, we did that already. And Joseph says... What does Joseph say? I don't know. He's just
The point about the land in the Adirondacks is a good one. It's a great swath of land that was formerly Finch Prine, logging property that the Nature Conservancy acquired. Now the state has it. And they have to decide how... Forever wild it's going to be, whether they're going to allow snowmobiles and things, but that's an issue up there now.
Well, so interesting that you say that, because Roselle and I were recently at Manhattan State Park. I think it's a promontory over the garbage thing on the West Side Highway, if you ever pass it.
Oh, yes.
And it goes out there, and it's being used by lots and lots of people. My point is the Adirondacks are very important. Forever wild is very important, but I want to make sure when you say lots of people are using it, that we are putting our priorities in the right places for people to really get something out of it, as that Manhattan State Park
is. I think both are very worthy. The city is creating lots of great riverfront parks. But I was up in Lake Placid a couple weeks ago, and every single trailhead was just packed with cars on both sides of the roads. I mean, the Adirondacks are a rich resource for all of New York. And
absolutely
the
right. I wouldn't.
All right.
Yeah. Do you want another one or not?
No.
Okay.
We're out of time. We are late, but I want to thank Alan, of course, and Judy Patrick and Mike Spain. Thank you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.